Mr. Peace, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court, counsel, I would like to please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Andrew Pease. I'm an attorney here on behalf of Farmers Cooperative and Frontier Cooperative Company. Two separate appeals that were filed with the same issue and the same arguments. As stated, these appeals have been consolidated for purposes of oral argument. Frontier Cooperative and Farmers Cooperative urge cooperative corporations engaged in the business of buying and selling agricultural products and inputs and selling on-farm services such as the application of website. In 2014, the cooperatives filed with the Nebraska Department of Revenue Forms 7-8-1 seeking a refund for payment of sales and use tax for the purchase of ag machinery and equipment for parts and repairs. In addition to the Form 7AG submitted by the cooperatives, they provided a spreadsheet of each of the itemized purchases, as well as the invoices for each purchase that was made subject to sales tax. The cooperative did not file a request for a formal evidentiary hearing, instead decided to pursue the informal review process with the Department of Revenue, which typically consists of a dialogue between the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue, an exchange of information and answering any questions that
did the department have correct questions?
Yes, the department department specifically was looking for the cooperative's personal property tax schedules.
And did you ever provide those?
No, we did not. The position of...
Does that affect your case?
No, we don't believe so, because if you look at the statute in Section 77-2708.01, there's no reference to the necessity of providing your personal property tax schedules in order to qualify for the sales tax refund. This is a sales tax refund, not a personal property tax refund. And if you look at subsection 2 within section 77-2708.01, it specifically provides that after a sales tax refund is approved, the Department of Revenue can share that information with any other tax entity within the state. Thus allowing them to provide that information to, say, a county assessor's office in order for the county assessor to then reflect upon whether or not the personal property tax was paid on the property in which the sales tax refund was granted.
Isn't this a simple question of that if you have paid sales and use tax on a particular item and you've also paid personal property tax on that particular item, that you are entitled to a refund because otherwise you'd be taxed twice?
Yes, that's correct.
So isn't it incumbent on you to show that you did pay tax on both of these items?
Well, we believe that...
How else do you recover if you don't show the department that you were doubly taxed?
Well, we believe that the legislature certainly intended for there to be an accountability effect here, but that the accountability effect actually works the opposite of how the department positioned that it was to play out. In terms of, the department demanded that they receive the personal property tax returns in order to verify the personal property tax was paid on the parts in which they were seeking the sales tax return, right? We believe it works in the opposite fashion insofar as the statute...
Well, they just have to trust your word on this, is that...
Well,
what you're saying is that
I would say the county assessor has the ability to review if the part was subject to sales tax and a refund was issued for that sales tax and there was not a personal property tax paid on that. The county assessor has the ability, as provided under the statute and elsewhere, to assess and audit the personal property tax of the taxpayer to ensure that there was personal property tax paid on that part of repair for the sales tax refund.
Are there any regulations that would advise a taxpayer on how to make this claim?
There are. The department has provided a taxpayer guidance on this. The issue for the cooperatives was that the taxpayer guidance is based on what we believe is the incorrect interpretation of the statute in section 77-2708. Specifically, we believe that the department is using a definition for depreciable which is not consistent with the definition of depreciable use for purposes of personal property tax. If you look at section 77-202, subsection 3, it specifically provides that tangible personal property, which is not depreciable tangible personal property, as defined in 77-119, shall be exempt from property tax. In other words, we believe that the same definition for depreciable tangible personal property or property tax should apply to depreciable tangible personal property for sales tax. If you have the inverse there, then you'll either have property that is subject to sales tax or subject to personal property tax.
So you're sort of invoking the mirror image world of tax.
Exactly. We believe that the definition for depreciable needs to be consistent with the personal property tax scheme in section 77-202 and the sales tax scheme in 77-2708.01. And this
isn't world, the language somewhat different in those sections?
You're correct in that 77-119 does define depreciable tangible personal property. And the specific phrase at issue within 2708 is depreciable repairs or parts for ag machinery. But we believe that, as the district court found, certainly it can apply to parts as they are tangible personal property. And as to the repairs themselves, the labor on the repairs is not subject to sales tax if it's separately itemized. In effect, the effect that it has is that repairs are subject to sales tax in their entirety if there's not a separate itemization of the labor and the parts. Thus, really, the focus here is the tax on the parts.
If these repairs are also being used as part of the depreciation schedule, and those items or expenditures are being depreciated as part of the equipment, and you have paid sales and use tax on that particular item, then you're entitled to deduct the sales and use tax or refund for that because you have been paid double taxes. But if those repairs are not included in the property tax values, personal property tax values, subject to depreciation, you're not. Isn't that a logical way to look at this?
I agree with you insofar as you are entitled to either refund on sales tax or having property that is...
If you're depreciating it, then that's another deduction over there. You're not going to be taxed twice on that. But if you're not, if that doesn't go into your depreciation schedule for your personal property, then why are you being doubly taxed?
If it's not on your depreciation schedule for personal property, then you would...
So you're not really depreciating that value. That's just simply a repair to the equipment that maintains its status.
I guess I don't disagree. I think that our belief is that the statute specifically provides that the verification process is to work the opposite of how the department has portrayed it to be, which is that the county assessor has the ability to do audit and examine the property tax schedules of the taxpayer if, in fact, the sales tax refund was granted or approved.
So your argument is that the department had the duty to verify through the assessor, not through the applicant seeking the refund?
Correct. Only after the sales tax refund was approved, that's stated. And that the statute itself does not require this production of personal property tax schedules, which the department and the district court both argued were necessary in order for the taxpayer to meet their burden as to the sales tax.
And your argument is depreciable is defined in 77-202 versus 77-119.
Our position is that depreciable for purposes of 77-2708.1, which is the statute at issue, is defined in 77-119.
So they're talking about two different things in that situation, aren't they?
Well, I don't believe so because the depreciable tangible personal property and depreciable repairs or parts, we believe, are, while the terms may not be the same, in essence, they are the same thing. The part is a piece of tangible.
So are all parts placed on a deduction or depreciation schedule?
No, but...
Some are expensed out, aren't they?
Right, all parts, and our belief is that the proper definition is that the parts have to have a terminal life of more than 1 year, so that your standard repairs, maintenance that happens, such as oil changes and those kinds of things, are not subject to a refund.
And where does that definition come from?
That definition comes from 77-119. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartel, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jay Bartel, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Department of Revenue and the Tax Commission. The issue before the Court is the interpretation of the sales tax refund for depreciable repairs or parts for agricultural machinery or equipment found in 77-2708.01.
And in order to be depreciable parts and repairs, they have to be listed on the personal property schedule of the parties.
It's our position that depreciable in this context means that you get a refund of the repairs or parts because they're depreciable and thus subject to the personal property tax. The definition in 77-119, which talks about depreciable tangible personal property, is not relevant here because, again, it refers to tangible personal property, not repairs or parts, as the relevant definition is in the sales tax refund statute. The reference to tangible personal property there in 77-119 makes sense when you're talking about a piece of equipment because determinable life is relevant there. But when you're looking at repairs or parts, what determines whether they're depreciable is the effect that they have. Do they prolong the life of the property, arrest deterioration, or increase its value or usefulness? That's how you determine if repairs or parts are depreciable.
And where does that definition come from?
Well, there's two places. Obviously, there's the information guide where the department advises taxpayers that that's generally what is required to show you have a depreciable repair or part.
But let me inject just right there because I think opposing counsel says that guide's not a good reading of the statutes.
Well, and we think it is. So that's where our disagreement lies.
But the sole purpose is to avoid a double taxation.
Right, and I think to the extent there's any ambiguity here.
And if these aren't parts and repairs that you're listed on your depreciable personal property, then they're not being taxed twice.
Right. The legislative history is very clear. LB 345 in 1993 was where this refund came from. And the legislature realized that when they put the new tax on depreciable tangible personal property for ag machinery equipment, they provided for a sales tax refund. But they realized a year later that the repairs that were depreciable repairs or parts for that equipment, were also going to be subject to property tax. So the trade-off was we will give a sales tax refund for the purchases of the depreciable repairs or parts for ag machinery and equipment to make it consistent with the underlying equipment itself.
Okay, if the department's interpretation of the statute is correct, and I'm talking about subsection 2 of section 2708.01, what is the last sentence of that subsection 2 mean? The information provided on a tax refund claim allowed under this section may be disclosed to any other tax official of this state. Why would there be any disclosure if the department's interpretation is correct?
Because if the department, for example, provided information related to a sales tax refund claim to a county assessor, the county assessor can then determine whether or not, in fact, the repair or part upon which the refund claim was based was reported on a personal property tax schedule.
But I think we're getting at the practical level, who goes out and about and finds all these pieces of evidence and reconciles them.
Why would you ever report it to a county assessor or provide that information if you've already ascertained that it's on their schedule?
Well, I don't think you would need to at that point. But we can't get it from the county assessor. The taxpayer can provide it. And we're not suggesting that it's mandatory for a taxpayer to provide those schedules. But if you're trying to show that you're entitled to a refund to avoid double taxation, that's the clearest way to do so.
You have to show where you've been taxed twice.
Yeah, the burden of proof to establish entitlement to the sales tax refund is on the taxpayer. So if the taxpayer can show that we've listed what we are claiming a refund for as taxable personal property, then the refund claim can be approved.
I mean, this part, for example, a new engine was installed in this combine. That part was taxed as sales, and it was also listed as depreciable upon the personal property schedule of the parties. And so if the purchase of the new engine is listed on the depreciable property schedule as enhancing the value of the combine, then they're entitled to deduct the sales and use tax paid for that engine in the first place.
Right. They can claim a refund, and the refund in that case would be approved. But our problem is the department's cooperative's interpretation isn't really just trying to avoid double taxation. What they're trying to get is taxation of repairs or parts that are not depreciable, which was not what the legislature intended. And I think there's just by examples.
They're not trying to get taxation, they're trying to get a refund.
They're trying to get a refund of items that aren't really depreciable. And again, if you look at just the record in the farmer's case, for an example, some of the claims are for like wires and belts, items to repair alternators, fuel and air filters, gaskets and bolts. All of those are routine maintenance. They're ordinary expenses. None of those would be depreciable. Yet they've submitted invoices asking the department to give them a sales tax refund for them as depreciable repairs or parts. So in order to honor the legislative intent, which was to allow a refund only for depreciable repairs or parts, you have to look at only items that are capital expenses that, again, improve the property, increase its usefulness, and those kind of ordinary items were never intended to qualify for a refund.
If they would have listed those items in their personal property tax, would you have granted the refund?
I don't know how they could have. I suppose they could have erroneously done that. But I think then the remedy probably would have been to try to get a personal property tax refund because they would not have owed personal property tax on those matters.
So some other tax official, to use the language of 2708, would have got interested in this. Things were wrongly listed.
Erroneously, yes. And of course there could be limits as to whether they can get a refund depending upon.
Right.
And you asked for depreciation schedules and or personal property tax. Is that correct?
Both were mentioned, I think, yes, in each respective case.
Right. So if they'd given you the depreciation schedules and not the personal property tax schedules, would you have given the refund at that point?
I would assume the department would have done so. Now, if it was a depreciation schedule versus the actual personal property tax schedule, they may have provided that information to the assessor to make sure it was properly listed.
That'd be the verification step, is that correct?
Yes. And again, we're not suggesting that a taxpayer must give that schedule to us, but it sure is helpful if you're trying to figure out if, in fact, a repair or part is truly depreciable as opposed to an item of ordinary expense. And if you look at the record, the department did grant a substantial number of the farmers, you know, claims just based on the invoices. And what has to happen in that case is you look at the actual items listed and they make an educated guess, if you will, given the cost of the repair and the nature of the items listed, whether it is a depreciable item versus an ordinary expense. It would sure be a lot easier.
I beg your pardon, on the basis of the invoices.
That's all we had to work with.
The examiner surmises whether or not it's depreciable.
Yeah, it's possible. We even allowed some things we shouldn't have allowed. But
and your definition of depreciable comes from the IRS?
It's basically, and that's what also really, if you look at personal property tax regulations, it's clear that we're not talking just about tangible personal property, but also it says that what's taxable includes capital expenses incurred because of major repairs, parts, labor, and installation costs that prolong the useful life and increase the value of the asset or adapted for a different use. That's 350 Nebraska Administrative Code 20.002.01C. So again, there are repairs or costs that are depreciable that are subject to personal property tax. The sales tax refund is designed to allow for the sales tax paid on those purchases to be refunded.
So not all repairs and parts are created equal, and you need to have some help discerning the difference.
Yes, and that's why depreciable is the key word there.
Thank you.
Capital expense, depreciable. Ordinary expense is not. Unless there are further questions, we would ask the court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That then concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.